Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now here's another way to fight political polarization. We'll have a call-in on meeting people different from you and how that changed your politics. Who has a story to tell? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. This is one of those segments that we do here on this program to fight political polarization, which is such a big problem in the country today, as Congress seems unable to make compromises on the big issues that they might have made in the past. And more broadly, to break us out of our political echo chambers, which are getting reinforced all the time in so many ways, and even at a more basic human level, beyond politics even, most people live in the world of our own experiences, right? And for most people, those experiences are not that broad. We are creations of our experiences in life. And so it's a good thing, I hope, if we can use a radio show like this in a place like Greater New York, where we have listeners from so many different backgrounds, to hear a little more about people not like ourselves, whoever yourself is, to come to the experience of listening to this show, not just to argue your point of view from your perspective, though that's important too, and obviously we have a lot of that, but also to come with the mindset that whatever your own background and experience is, that that's just a starting point, not an end point. Your own experience is a starting point for connecting with others who have had different life experiences. So with that in mind, we invite you to call in and tell us a story of meeting people different from you and how that changed your politics. Who has a story to tell? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Now, the immediate inspiration for this is the segment on 60 Minutes last night that profiled Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Some of you know this history and some of you don't, but Gillibrand was first elected to Congress as a member of the House from an upstate district near Albany, and she was known as a moderate to conservative Democrat. She was an official member of the Conservative Democrats Caucus called the Blue Dog Democrats, and her voting record reflected it in certain ways. For example, she had an A rating from the NRA for her strong support of gun rights. Did you know that about Gillibrand? But when Hillary Clinton resigned from the Senate to become President Obama's Secretary of State in 2009, New York Governor David Paterson appointed Congresswoman Gillibrand to fill out Clinton's Senate term. And
after I got appointed, I went down to Brooklyn to meet with families who had suffered from gun violence in their communities. And you immediately experience the feeling that I couldn't have been more wrong. You know, I only had the lens of upstate New York.
But you had lived in New York City for a decade.
And that's why
you
I was
traveled abroad.
I was wrong. What it's about is the power of the NRA and the greed of that industry.
She said she was embarrassed by her stances as a congressman, including the A grade from the NRA. So that's really interesting, isn't it? Listen again.
I came from a district that was 98% white. We have immigrants, but not a lot of immigrants. And I hadn't really spent the time to hear those kind of stories about what it's like to worry that your dad could be taken away at any moment. What it's
but
like.
You reading the paper?
Yeah, and I didn't take the time to understand why these issues mattered because it wasn't right in front of me. And that was my fault. It was something that I'm embarrassed about and I'm ashamed of.
So on guns and there on immigration, Gillibrand changed. And what she said at the end there, wow, that she was embarrassed by her stances as a congresswoman, including that A grade from the NRA, and that she was ashamed. So that's really interesting, isn't it? The change of perspective from meeting different people, people more unlike her. You might ask if it was disingenuous in the case of a sophisticated politician from a sophisticated political family, which she was from, and Gillibrand was changing her position because her statewide constituency was much more liberal and diverse than her upstate one, and she was just playing politics. We can't really know. But let's assume for the moment that at least some of this was genuine. It certainly rings true based on what we know about being an open-minded human being on planet Earth, right? You meet different kinds of people and your perspective broadens. So with that in mind, we invite you to call in and tell us a story of meeting people different from you and how that changed your politics. Who has a story to tell? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And on her admitting that she was embarrassed about her past position and ashamed, how many elected officials ever go there, right? It is certainly the opposite of Donald Trump, who will never admit fault and may be incapable of feeling shame. But it's rare for any politician to say that publicly. So listeners, we can add that question. Have you ever felt embarrassed or felt shame at a political position you used to hold after you became more aware? But more broadly, inspired by Gillibrand on 60 Minutes last night and consistent with what we do here sometimes anyway, we invite you to call in and tell a story, and please make it really this, of meeting people different from you and how that changed your politics. Who has a story to tell? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and we'll take your calls right after this.
On the next Fresh Air...
When you think you're going to die, you really start to feel like you're fading to gray and everyone else is still in color.
Kate Bowler was diagnosed with incurable cancer in her 30s. She's married, has a young child, and teaches at Duke Divinity School. Her new memoir is about how her religion has affected how she deals with illness and how illness has affected her faith. Join us.
Today at 2 on 93.9 FM WNYC.
WNYC is supported by Montclair Film, presenting 70s Mixtape, a dance party with performances by Stephen Colbert, John Batiste, Patrick Wilson, Warren Zanes, and Joe McGinty in the Loser's Lounge. Saturday, February 24th at 8 p.m., montclairfilm.org. WNYC is a media partner of Strand Bookstore, presenting Roseanne Lake, Leftover in China, a discussion on well-educated and goal-oriented women in China struggling with societal gender roles. February 19th at 7 p.m., info at strandbooks.com.
When networks revive old TV shows, what else are they reviving?
If you're a person of color, if you're non-white, you really never saw yourself on screen, not even in many cases in the background or as an extra. That's what we're seeing when you actually reach back and take the same casting tropes.
How nostalgia can outweigh diversity on the small screen. I'm Tanzina Vega, and I'll be with you next time on The Takeaway, weekday afternoons at 3 on 93.9 FM.
And on tomorrow's Brian Lehrer Show, New York Times Magazine contributing writer Maggie Jones. Did you read her big piece in the magazine this weekend on teenagers and porn, specifically how much porn they're watching, a lot more than their parents think, and how it's shaping their views on sex and power and relationships? That's tomorrow here on the Brian Lehrer Show.
This is WNYC 93.9 FM and AM 820, NPR News and the New York Conversation.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now to your calls on meeting people different from you and how that changed your politics. Who has a story to tell? Our lines are full, but when people finish up, you can get in at 212-433-WNYC. And George in Stuartsville, New Jersey, around WNYC, thanks so much for calling. Hi, George.
Good morning, Brian. Love your show.
Thank you.
About 2 years ago, my wife and I moved from a New York suburb in Rockland County, which was very Democrat, very liberal, and we're both very liberal Democrats, moved out to Warren County, New Jersey, which is probably the reddest county in New Jersey. We've made dozens of new friends there. Almost all the people we've met are dyed-in-the-wool Republicans. Many of them are avid Donald Trump supporters.
So what from coming in contact with those people changed you, if anything, about your politics?
Well, it's not so much that it changed my politics as it changed my perception of what Donald Trump's supporters and real right-wing people are.
Toward what, most centrally?
Well, I no longer demonize them. I say I disagree with them, but they're people who have rational bases for what they believe. I disagree with their analysis and thoughts, but we're no less both Americans and all with the same ultimate goal of making our country a better place. We just have radically different ideas of how to get there. I don't know that my friends and I, are ever going to solve anything in our conversations, but I think they've become more tolerant mm-hmm. of bleeding heart liberals by knowing my wife and I and talking to us,
and vice
we've
versa.
Become more tolerant of their viewpoints.
George, thank you very much for starting us off. Edward in Yorkville, you're on WNYC. Hi, Edward.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm from Alabama originally, and I sort of grew up with the idea. I don't know if I grew up with it, but my idea of when gay marriage started to become a really big national topic, a couple of years at least before the Supreme Court decision, I met a guy through a sort of community of fellow appreciators of the same band, and he was a sort of an activist on the topics. He was from Santa Monica, and he sort of, I don't know, we became friends because of something else, but sort of over time, slowly and methodically and in sort of a rational way, he completely won me over. It was exactly the kind of thing you would hope would happen in politics.
You got to know him as a gay man, as an individual, rather than from the environment you grew up in, thinking about homosexuality just in the abstract?
Yeah, and he actually wasn't even gay himself. This was just a big cause of his. He actually married a straight guy, but yeah, I think so. It was like, uh-huh. Here's a guy, and also, and I think this is something that matters. This is, matters the way I think. He was very... He would explain it in a really rational way. He would say, you know, he would challenge me and say, give me two good reasons or one good reason why, you know, if mm-hmm. you and mm-hmm. your girlfriend are allowed to have this, why two men shouldn't be.
Right. And Edward, I'm going to leave it there to get some other people on. Thank you so much for that story. Mary Sue in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary Sue.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Can hear you just fine.
Great. My name's Mary Sue Lindley. I'm 71 years old, and I have lived, I grew up in Kentucky on a farm in western Kentucky, and moved to Connecticut and then New York after college, and married my husband, and we lived on the Upper West Side where he was going to law school at Columbia. Mm-hmm. And in 1976, our daughter was born, and we bought a house in Brownstone, Brooklyn, in a challenging area. On one side, we had a bombed-out methadone clinic that was two houses down. The house between us and the methadone clinic was occupied by a family that sold drugs. And on the other side, we had a rooming house with some... Half of the people were men, and they were alcoholics, and they sat on the stoop and drank wine all day, most of the day. And the other part of them were young women who came and went. They had children, and I think they had a pimp. And I quickly realized that I needed to befriend the people in the rooming house. The people in the drug sale house were sort of beyond my beyond my kin totally, but I had quit work when our daughter was born, so I'm staying at home, my husband's going to work, and I have these challenges on either side, and I decided that the most important thing for me to do was to become friends with the people in the rooming house.
Because you realize something about your own, I think you said to our screener, white privilege?
Oh, yeah, I'm coming to that.
Okay.
So I suddenly realized that well, not suddenly, but over a few months, mm-hmm. realized that the only difference between me and the people who lived in the rooming house was, particularly the women, was that I grew up in a lily white place in Kentucky where my parent, where my family took care of me and sent me to college, and then I got married, and now I was living at home with my daughter with him, my husband, being my only visible means of support. And the only difference between me and those women was that I had had those privileges and they had not.
And did it change your politics about something?
It changed my... I was reared a Republican. And I was one of the few Republicans. My husband and I were one of the few Republicans in Brooklyn when we moved here. Two of the few. We signed all kinds of petitions. And we very quickly became Democrats and liberal Democrats at that. And I'm on the left end of liberal Democrat ideology at this moment.
From meeting people who are that unlike yourself. Great story. Mary Sue, thanks a lot. And we'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're listening to stories of meeting people different from yourself and how that changed your politics. Who has a story to tell? 212-433-WNYC. And Allie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Allie.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How about you?
Good, thanks.
And?
I'm calling because I grew up in a very conservative place in Southern California where I was really used to people with a lot of money being really upset about tax and trying to figure out how to get out of paying tax and very negative about big government. And after college, I lived in England for 10 years. And one day I was speaking to an aristocrat who had a ton of money. And I assumed that his opinion would be the same as those I grew up around. And he actually totally surprised me. And he said that he felt it was an honor to pay tax and that he felt it was a privilege and that his money he saw as not his own, but merely he was like a custodian to contribute to his community. And it really made me, it changed the way I thought about the government and taxes. And it was just really eye-opening. It made me feel like there could be a way where a rich person could be liberal and feel good about it.
Great story from meeting an aristocrat in London, of all things. Thank you, Allie. Nicole in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nicole.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good, thank you.
So I'm calling, I grew up, sounds like everybody else's story, wildly conservative in very right-wing Michigan, Calvinist town. And really sort of kind of went beyond what most of my peers and were thinking as far as pro-life and pro-choice were concerned. And I decided I was going to be different and I was going to be pro-choice. And I moved to New York City to go to NYU and came here and married my professor and one of my professors, and we have four children now, and became quickly pro-life again after having my first child. And I wasn't super outspoken about it, but I definitely aligned myself with the pro-life camp after having my son and then our second son and our third son, and then we were pregnant with our daughter. And they thought there was something wrong. Thank God there wasn't with her skull development, so I had to go in for ultrasound after ultrasound after ultrasound, like every week from the time I was 31 weeks. And it was in a place where for high-risk pregnancies. And I ran into somebody at one of these appointments who was going to be terminating a pregnancy because of an extreme birth defect. Like, the child would not have lasted, if at all, if the pregnancy even persisted. And so after hearing that story, I was compelled to go back to my original thoughts about pro-choice and pro-life, is that I became staunchly pro-choice once again.
It's so interesting. It's almost like meeting your own babies in the womb made you more pro-life, and then meeting another woman who struck you as having a really good reason for an abortion made you more pro-choice again.
Yeah, totally. Especially because if I was thinking, you know, here we have our fourth child in 5 years, and what happens if there was something desperately wrong with her? Thank God there wasn't, but like, what kind of effect would that have had on my other three children? And these are things that I didn't think about until this person opened my eyes and made me, not that I was ever discompassionate against people who would terminate, but I definitely had maybe a sliver of judgment after having my own children. And that completely dissipated after that meeting. And I was really grateful for it.
Thank you so much for that story, Nicole. We're grateful for that. And Seth in Pearl River, you're on WNYC. Hi, Seth.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. So I am. I grew up and lived in northern New Jersey and then Brooklyn. And about 2 years ago, moved to southern Rockland County, technically New York State, to a town that's overwhelmingly Republican. I happen to be and have always been Democrat, as well as my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been interesting. You know, all of my neighbors are Republican, and there hasn't been any, you know, flip-flop, like me turning Republican or them turning Democrat. But there is a definite, you know, respect in conversations and a deeper level of conversation wherein, you know, both me and my neighbors, when we're together, we actually share reasons, opinions. We talk beyond just, oh, well, this person's a Republican or a Democrat. You know, why one would be voting for them, what they've done for the local community. You know, so there's a, I think a development of a political dialogue and community understanding that's, you know, completely beyond this sort of, you know, national media framework.
So I'm curious,
red
Seth,
and blue.
I happen to have met somebody over the weekend who lives part-time in the city and part-time upstate in the Upper Hudson Valley. And he was telling me how basically all his neighbors up there are Trump supporters, and he's become really good friends with some of them. But the way they get by is they don't talk politics. It sounds like you do talk politics. What have you learned? What's an insight? You said you haven't changed your politics and you haven't changed their politics. But can you put your finger on something that you might see differently or more sympathetically or something like that than you did before?
Well, we have both. My neighbors, as well as I, have said point blank that, you know, that politics is about the person. It's not about the party. And we joke openly about, oh, we just, you know, I might have just gone and voted for somebody and they're going to go and, you know, quote, you know, reverse that vote count. And we also have said to each other point blank that, like, this is what America's about. You know, America isn't about, you know, whether I want my way and whether I'm getting it or not. But it's actually about dialogue and about the work everybody's doing to try to make this a place that works for everybody.
Seth, thank you very much for your call and your story. And that's going to have to do it. We could go on with these, but thank you so much for your stories of meeting people different from yourself and how that changed your politics. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.